Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up a little bit later, IPR's Sheila Brummer on a Western Iowa school district at the center of an assault investigation that involving its high school wrestling team. Also, Breanne Fannensteel of the Des Moines Register on a new series of Iowa polls. And we'll talk with ISU Extension crop specialist Mark Licht, his thoughts on the upcoming planting season after this unusual, some say missing, winter that we've had. But first, let's get an update of activity at the Iowa State House from Robin Upsall. Robin is Iowa Capitol Dispatch reporter covering the state legislature and politics. Hi again, Robin.
Hi, nice to be here, Ben.
Nice to have you. I wanted to start off with that fiery address last night by President Biden. It was a State of the Union speech that touched on many of the issues being debated in our Iowa legislature. Also a speech last night in which the January school shooting in Perry, Iowa was referenced. I want to play an excerpt of that, Robin. He talked about how he and the First Lady visited Uvalde, Texas in the aftermath of the school shooting there that left 21 dead, where he said they spent hours talking with the families.
The constant refrain, and I was there for hours meeting with every family. They said, do something. Do something. Well, I did do something by establishing the first ever Office of Gun Violence Prevention in the White House, that the Vice President is leading the charge. Thank you for doing it. Meanwhile, my predecessor told the NRA he's proud he did nothing on guns when he was president. Oof. After another shooting in Iowa recently, he said, when asked what to do about it, he said, just get over it. There was his quote, just get over it. I say, stop it. Stop it, stop it, stop it.
Biden went on to demand a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines last night. He called for passage of universal background checks. He added, in his words, none of this violates the Second Amendment or vilifies responsible gun owners. I wanted to note here, Robin, that and I know you saw the address last night. In quoting former President Trump, President Biden added the word just before get over it. And to put former President Trump's words in context, which for accuracy, I think is needed here. This according to the today's Des Moines Register, which did some fact checking. Trump spoke the day after the Perry shooting in Sioux Center. And Trump said, quote, to the entire community, we love you, we pray for you, and we ask God to heal and comfort really the whole state. We're really with you as much as anybody can be. It's very terrible. That happened, just terrible. That's just horrible. It's so surprising to see it here, but we have to get over it. We have to move forward. So putting that quote from former President Trump in context that President Biden then referenced last night. Robin, to you, though, as we focus on our legislature, but keeping with gun violence in schools, Iowa lawmakers are taking a different approach. How so?
Yeah, so recently lawmakers passed a bill, I believe last week, that would allow a permitting process and add some new requirements for teachers to carry firearms on school grounds as a way for schools which want that option to deal with potential mass shootings. This week, they had a measure that included funding both for other safety measures like radio systems and communications with Iowa law enforcement and local law enforcement, but also included funding which could be used for grants for the training for firearm carrying on school grounds or for the weapon themselves, from what I understand.
Is this in any way a bipartisan move?
No. So for Army and school staff, that is definitely something that Democrats have been pretty fiercely opposed to, and opposed to the idea of bringing in weapons or, you know, in some cases, more weapons to school grounds. However, they do say, of course, that more needs to be done on school safety at Iowa schools and more provisions given to prevent shootings like what we saw in Perry. However, Republicans say that arming school staff is the best approach for especially rural places, which might not, you know, have the resources or the availability for police to respond as quickly as other places.
Also, last night in the State of the Union address, President Biden touched on teacher salaries, increasing teacher salaries across the country, but also action in our Iowa House. What was that?
Yeah, so yesterday, Iowa Republicans bipartisanly passed a move that would raise teacher starting salary to a minimum of $50,000 a year, as well as raising pay for other school staff, including para educators, to $15 an hour.
Away from education, there was a defeated bill that would have banned more restrictive topsoil and stormwater rules. Tell us about that, Robin.
Yeah, so this was one that would have put a limit on regulations dealing with stormwater runoff as well as topsoil, saying that local regulations cannot exceed these federal or state set minimums. And what the discussion came from is that Democrats and opponents to this measure said that in not letting localities set higher minimums will prevent places that, you know, have more problems with flooding and more issues, especially as storms become more common, will prevent them from taking any preventative measures to say, you know, prevent houses from collapsing or these big, pretty dramatic issues we've seen when there are floods or storms that come through Iowa.
The election process, of course, our last legislative session made many changes in election law. But again, this session, more proposals advancing to change those election laws. Tell us about what's happening there.
Yeah, so there is a bill that was passed by the Iowa House that would have restricted absentee voting in some ways. Specifically, what a lot of Democrats opposed was it would require absentee ballots be returned the day before an election, as well as banning ballot drop boxes. Both of these are measures which Democrats said make voting, you know, prohibitively restrictive or prohibitively more difficult for people who are voting by mail, as well as, you know, specifically limiting people who have disabilities and who have other things that prevent them from voting in person on election day from, you know, having their voice heard.
Yeah. A Republican, I noticed Republican Bobby Kaufman of Wilton said these were a product of the pandemic. These ballot drop boxes and aren't necessary. Interestingly, a new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll released today shows 56% of Iowans oppose banning the use of ballot drop boxes for Iowans returning absentee ballots. 41% favor a ban, 3% aren't sure. So 56% of Iowans opposing the banning the use of ballot drop boxes. Let's move on to immigration, which was certainly a part of the speech last night. Illegal immigration would be a state crime in Iowa under a Senate bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something that would give law enforcement in Iowa the authority to arrest undocumented immigrants on the basis of their being in the country illegally. This is something that was modeled off of legislation in Texas that I believe also ran into some issues, but this would also, in addition to allowing arrest, would allow ordering someone to a port of entry for them to leave the country, which Democrats said wasn't realistic in Iowa unless, you know, they were transporting someone to the U.S. southern border or taking them to the Des Moines International Airport, which wouldn't necessarily mean they're insured to be leaving the country.
Mm-hmm. Also related to immigration, the Iowa House passing an extreme penalty for fentanyl deaths. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, so this is something that would make a first-degree murder charge for a person providing, that means either selling or just giving fentanyl to, or fentanyl or drugs containing, a substance containing fentanyl to another person if that drug that they provided results in that person's death. This is, Republicans say, meant to target drug dealers and folks who are, you know, introducing fentanyl to people, but also Democrats argued against it because it could mean that a teen who provides their friend a drug at a party that they do not know contained fentanyl could be charged with first-degree murder for that person's death.
All right. We've run out of time, Robin. Next week is the second funnel deadline. Very quickly, anything in particular you'll be watching? Of course, there's so many bills still in the mix at this point, aren't there?
Of course. So the Senate still has not passed any legislation on area education agencies. That's something I'm definitely looking for next week as well. I believe neither chamber has moved on boards and commissions, some of the changes that are going there. The governor's defining sex bill is also still in play and has not been moved on. So there are just there are quite a few big pieces of legislation still waiting to move.
Robin Upsall, Iowa Capital Dispatch reporter. Robin, thank you for keeping track of all of it and sharing some of it with us. Thank you. Until next time, Robin.
Thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. We'll be back in just a moment with more of our News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in just a moment, Brianne Fannensteel of the Des Moines Register on a new series of Iowa polls. But first, this week in Northwest Iowa, two school administrators resigned in a district that is at the center of an assault investigation involving the high school wrestling team. IPR's Sheila Brummer has been covering developments from the Hinton School District. She joins us now. Sheila, welcome to the program. This is really an amazing story that will be developing. Fill us in on what's going on, what we know, and what you can confirm at this point.
Thanks, Ben. Well, Hinton is a small town. It's located just north of Sioux City, and it's been impacted by what parents say was a hazing incident that took place at a state tournament earlier in February. Well, on Tuesday night of this week, the Hinton School Board accepted the resignations of the middle and high school principal, Phil Goostowers, and the athletic director, Brian DeYoung. And DeYoung is also an elementary school principal. Now, school officials didn't say why the two will step down at the end of June or if it is connected with the investigation.
Tell me more about what happened with the Hinton School Board recently.
I talked to three parents who said that their sons were victimized by older teammates with the taser, and some shared their stories with the school board during a meeting that took place on the 12th of February. Now, this was a meeting where the parents showed up, and they were there to talk about two wrestling coaches who had been suspended. The parents talked mainly about the head coach, Casey Crawford, who was still on paid administrative leave and is still on paid administrative leave. And there were parents who were on both sides of the issue. There's also an assistant coach who was allowed to coach the team during the boys' state wrestling tournament. It was very heated, very emotional. I actually had a hard time sleeping that night after covering that meeting. I mean, it was just heartbreaking to hear parents talk. And again, there were people on both sides of the issue. Some parents say, hey, the coach cares about the kids. He's done so great improving the program. They have a winning program now. But then there were other parents who said, hey, that it isn't right. And they wanted the coach fired.
Sheila, is there a criminal investigation into these allegations?
Well, police in Coralville say because the situation involves juveniles, they won't be releasing any more information about the case. That even includes if charges will officially be filed. This is what they did confirm, though. They say they launched an investigation into what happened at a hotel in Coralville during the state dual wrestling tournament. That's a team tournament, and that took place in early February.
From reading your story on IPR.org, Sheila, at least one of the tasing incidents was recorded?
Yes, that's the main thing right there. There was a video circulating on social media that showed one man being assaulted. And here's what his mother told the school board that she saw in that video.
I pressed play and immediately saw my son laying on a hotel bed, being held down by two of his teammates. They all laughed as they pressed a taser a few different times while they fully covered his mouth and he had trouble breathing. They continued to laugh and told him that he needed to stop breathing so hard, as another bystander said that they were torturing him. And I watched as his eyes continued to move around in fear.
Sheila, that's amazing. Hinton, a small town in northwest Iowa, it's easy to see that this has really impacted that community.
You know, Ben, it really has. Again, I said Hinton was just north of Sioux City and has about 1,000 people. And they do have students that actually open enroll from Sioux City because families say they want a smaller school district that they think is safer. Some people are very upset over this. I recorded audio from the hallway after that school board meeting that took place last month, and tensions were really high.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the ones that are good, Jackie. I'm talking about the ones.
All the boys. They were all together.
They weren't. And the freshman boys were in their room terrified to leave for fear of what would happen to them. Seven? Then you should be siding with the people that are responsible.
And again, that's audio after a meeting that took place on February 12th in Hinton. The police chief was there and he advised the parents to meet privately to talk things over. And they did. And parents at the time said they thought it was a productive conversation. But things still seemed really tense a few weeks later. I talked to a mother after this week's special school board meeting. Parents weren't allowed to speak that standard procedure during that kind of special school board meeting. But that parent said she only wanted to be identified by the initials DH because she says her son was one of seven freshmen targeted. And here's what she says about the situation.
A lot of things have been unraveling more and more and more. It's going to hit the Hinton community hard. And it's where it's going to be getting worse before it gets better. There's still a lot of people that need to be held accountable and where that we still don't have answers.
The head wrestling coach is still on paid administrative leave. And when I asked the superintendent, Kent Slater, how long that suspension might take place, he says it will be in place until it's not. He didn't give a timeline. At least a couple of weeks ago, there was still support for the coach. And during the state tournament, some of the Hinton wrestlers wore shirts that said Free Crawford. The coach is Casey Crawford, and that's his last name. Some parents say Crawford told the wrestlers to hide evidence by deleting the video from Snapchat.
Sheila, we heard from parents about accountability, and you mentioned the suspension of coaches. What about the wrestlers involved?
Well, there hasn't been anyone that has said that the hazing didn't happen. It's on video. School officials say they can't release a lot of information about the wrestlers accused of taking part because of confidentiality concerns. And they say two students were reassigned but didn't release any more information, even what reassigned actually means. More were suspended from competing in a meet that would have helped them qualify for the state tournament. And parents of the students who were tased say there has been a culture of bullying that has been allowed to happen within the wrestling team.
Sheila, this is an amazing story, and it makes me think, of course, this will not be the last we've heard about the situation as it develops. Sheila Brummer, IPR's Western Iowa reporter. Thank you for now, Sheila.
Thank you, Ben.
It's News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This week, a series of new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa polls released each day. They've dealt with many questions in national and state politics. Yesterday, before last night's State of the Union address, I discussed some of their findings with Breanne Fanensteel, chief politics reporter with the Des Moines Register. Hi, Breanne.
Hi, Ben.
Let's jump into the Iowa poll that deals with President Biden, former President Trump. You're seeing there in the latest poll numbers a continuing decline in favorability ratings for Biden, while Donald Trump gets a jump. Tell us more.
Yeah, so this is an early head-to-head matchup between Joe Biden and Donald Trump in November. So we tested this with likely Iowa voters. And what that found is that Trump almost doubles his margin of victory from 2020 if the election were held today. So the poll shows that Trump would lead Biden 48% to 33%. Another 15% say that they're going to vote for somebody else. 1% would not vote, 2% aren't sure. And so that margin for Donald Trump, again, is about twice what we saw in 2020. He defeated Joe Biden in Iowa by 8 points that year.
Mm-hmm. How do you explain this? What do you see as the forces at work to make Trump increase his lead here in Iowa, at least according to this poll?
Yeah, well, what we see is that fewer than a third of all Iowans say that they approve of the job that Joe Biden is doing in office right now. It's 29%, and 69% disapprove. And so that's a really big disapproval number. And at the same time, 79% of Iowans say things in the country have gotten off on the wrong track. The 17% say things are going in the right direction. So those are some really difficult numbers for Joe Biden to overcome. And we are seeing an erosion in some of his support from 2020 versus Donald Trump. So, for example, according to the poll, 89% of likely Republican voters say that they're going to vote for Donald Trump. And that's a pretty high number following the caucuses when we saw, about half of Iowa Republicans caucus for somebody else. And comparing their 2020 numbers, Donald Trump does a better job of keeping those people who voted for him in 2020 than Joe Biden does. So for Donald Trump, 91% of those who voted for him in 2020 say that they'll do that again this November. For Biden, it's 79%. And so there's a gap there. Joe Biden, convinced people to support him that first time around. Maybe that included some disaffected Republicans, some independents. But it looks like he's just not doing as good of a job at keeping them.
At the same time, when you focused on Donald Trump's favorability and unfavorability ratings, a lot of Iowans not in love with that candidate either.
No, that's exactly right. Today, 49% of Iowans say that they have a favorable view of Donald Trump. That's up from 42%. And that's still not 50%, right? That is not a great number for him, but it's really not bad. Whereas Biden has the lowest favorability ratings of his presidency. 31% of Iowans say that they have a favorable view of him. So when you're comparing the two candidates together, those numbers are interesting. And one thing that I think reporters are going to be following a lot through this election cycle is those people who say that they don't have a good opinion of either of the candidates. Mm-hmm. You know, they people are starting to call them double haters, people who don't like Joe Biden, they don't like Donald Trump, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do in the November election.
Mm-hmm. Widespread concerns about President Biden's age, even though voters not expressing the same anxieties about Donald Trump, who at 77 is just 4 years Biden's junior. So these will make them the oldest presidential nominees in history. Did you look at age in this polling?
We did. You know, this has been a big conversation for people going into this election year. More than half of Iowa adults, 56%, say that Joe Biden is too old to serve a second term. About a quarter say that his age is just somewhat of a concern, and 17% say it's not a concern. And so that's notable because even many Democrats are expressing concern about his age. A third say it's just not a concern, but the plurality, 39%, say that it's at least somewhat of a concern, and 27% of Democrats say that Biden is too old to serve a second term. So there's a lot of conversation, I think some media criticism, too, about how we talk about Joe Biden's age and whether this is a media-driven narrative. But one thing that we hear in our reporting, and that's borne out by these poll numbers, is that a lot of people share this as a concern, and it may or may not be affecting how they vote in November. But as you point out, Donald Trump is also, you know, would be the oldest president ever sworn into the Oval Office if he's elected. But there is not quite as much widespread concern about his age. According to our poll, 42% say that his age is not a concern. 35% say it's somewhat of a concern, and 22% say he's too old to serve again.
This week, Governor Reynolds and also U.S. Senator Joni Ernst chose this week to put their support solidly behind Donald Trump following the Super Tuesday outcome. How much of a surprise is this? Let's take the Reynolds case, since she previously endorsed Trump's rival, Ron DeSantis, and has had to endure repeated targeting from Trump because of that endorsement.
Well, I don't think it's much of a surprise, to be honest. You know, I think if you're watching this, it's fair to wonder what she was going to do, whether she was going to endorse Donald Trump, because he had been very negative about her. He'd said a lot of things criticizing her in the wake of that endorsement of Governor DeSantis. But she has been pretty consistent throughout the past year, saying that regardless of who is the nominee, she plans to get behind that person in November. And so she tweeted out her support yesterday. That came after Nikki Haley ended her presidential campaign. So Donald Trump is the last Republican standing and is very much on pace to shore up the delegates that he needs to clinch that nomination here very soon. So I don't think it was too much of a surprise, but I do think it was an important public show of support for her to make. And for Iowa Republicans to have their support behind him.
And for U.S. Senator Ernst, you point out that she was not at the forefront of endorsing Trump as a member of the Republican Leadership Conference in the U.S. Senate.
Right. She was the last member of that Republican Leadership Conference to make her endorsement. And again, it comes after Nikki Haley had ended her campaign this week. And so, again, I don't think anyone was expecting Joni Ernst not to get behind Donald Trump if he's the nominee. But it is kind of just that formal statement that I think people were looking for to say Donald Trump is very much expected to be the nominee and she's behind him.
If you've just joined us, Breanne Fannin-Steele, chief politics reporter with the Des Moines Register. Before we go, I'd like to ask you, Breanne, about some other Iowa polls released by the Register this week. These were covered by your colleagues there at the Des Moines Register. Let's just fly over those, if we could, in brief, and people can check out the in-depth findings, because this is a lot of interesting politics involving the state legislature. Let's start with the Governor Reynolds' overhaul plan for Iowa's area education agencies, a top priority of hers this legislative session. What did the poll find?
Well, we asked Iowans, basically the way we do for a lot of politicians, do you have a favorable view or an unfavorable view? And 56% of Iowans have a favorable view compared to just 20% who have an unfavorable view. And that was a little bit of a surprise to us because we weren't sure how many people were going to truly know what area education agencies are. And again, these are the groups that provide special education services and other programming and resources to school districts in Iowa. So that was an interesting finding.
In another poll, more Iowans oppose than favor Governor Reynolds' plan to require transgender Iowans' birth certificates to designate both their sex at birth and their current gender identity. Tell us more about these poll results and how they may line up with the plans that the governor has.
So the poll found that 49% of Iowa adults oppose this proposal, while 44% favor it and 7% are not sure.
Critics describing it as an erasure of transgender and non-binary Iowans. Reynolds calling it the bill of women's bill of rights. We'll watch that as this legislative session continues. Let's move on to a social media poll, or a poll that looks at requiring children to have their parents' permission to have social media accounts.
Right. So this is an interesting one. More than half of Iowans, 55%, say that they favor that bill. 42% oppose it. The remaining 3% are not sure.
And finally, a final poll about income tax. Before we go, what did you measure there?
Well, as you might expect, Iowans feel pretty good about paying less money in income taxes. 62% say that they favor gradually eliminating the income tax. 30% oppose eliminating the tax, and 8% are not sure.
Okay, Breanne Vanensteel, Chief Politics Reporter with the Des Moines Register. Always nice to chat with you, Breanne. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more of our News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We are, of course, well into March now, and as the chances for wintry weather come to an end, we're all, I think, grappling with how different the season looks now compared to how we remember it from years past. What does this mean for the upcoming planting season? Let's turn to Mark Licht. He's associate professor and extension cropping systems specialist at Iowa State University. Hi, Mark. Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
So, so many implications. This has been a head-spinning winter here, but let's focus on the upcoming planting season. How could the unseasonably warm weather, this March weather that we're having now, impact the official start of planting?
Yeah, everyone's thinking about planting. I've actually already heard of a couple of people that have planted corn and or soybeans in Iowa. I think they're just, you know, trying to be a little bit provocative at this point. We all know it's a little bit too early, but as we look ahead, right? We're really just shy of a month out from when planting season would normally kind of, you know, just start in the crawling phase, so to speak. And I think with the warm weather that we've had, and just looking out in the 7 to 14 day forecast and out to the month forecast, it looks like we're going to have warmer weather, kind of warmer than normal. And so I expect that we're going to have an early planting season. And if we don't get any rainfall, I expect it to go rather quickly as well.
What do you mean by that, go rather quickly? The planting go rather quickly?
Yeah, yep. I think we'll plant our acres very quickly. You know, a lot of times we talk about, two, three, maybe four field work suitable days, as we think about April and early May. Right now, it just looks like we're lining up where we should have at least that right now, right? I mean, we're dry. So even if we do get, an inch of rain, in that early April timeframe, it won't take nearly as long for it to be field, suitable to get back in again. And so I think, again, I just think as we we don't have, so to speak, those field capacity or saturated soil conditions that typically means that things dry out quicker and we can roll those planters a little bit more efficiently. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I'm understanding this correctly, so soil moisture, a big factor here, but also soil temperature. Any other big factors?
Those are the two big factors that we talk about as far as when it is time to go and start planting. Obviously, we have things like the USDA Risk Management Agency. You know, they have guidelines as far as the early planting dates, and that's related to insurance, but it's also a good, at least for Iowa, it's a good indicator on, you know, when we can start planting. And so for corn in Iowa, that is April 10th. Soybeans, the southern three crop reporting districts is April 10th, but the northern six crop reporting districts, it's April 15th for soybeans. And so it just gives you an idea of when you might expect to see planters, you know, actually operating. Hopefully we, you know, about 5 to 7, maybe 10 days ahead of that, you know, we might see things like fertilizer applications, other, you know, planting prep type operations occurring.
Mm-hmm. You said you've already heard from some farmers, very few, I assume, who have already planting. Is that something you would recommend? You said provocative, also a risky move probably, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's something that we've been hearing, you know, about some of these situations across really the I states, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, you know, for several years, where you get some nice weather. And so someone, you know, pulls out the planter and, you know, and plants a couple acres type of thing. I think part of it is, you know, just, you know, provocative, getting the neighborhood talking a little bit. But I think part of it is really just kind of exploring, innovating a little bit, seeing how, you know, corn or soybeans that are planted really, really early, you know, might, you know, what, how they might be impacted by kind of that early planting, the weather that comes afterwards.
Mark Licht of ISU with us, a crop specialist there at ISU Extension. I'm looking, Mark, now at the latest U.S. Drought Monitor for Iowa issued yesterday, March 7th. And so let's talk about that map a little bit. I see the extreme drought D3 in the northeast. Well, I guess it's north central and northeast part of the state mainly. Comment on where we are now drought-wise and how that affects our ag picture going into the growing season.
Yeah, so that D3, that extreme drought, in northeast Iowa and north central Iowa, it has expanded a little bit compared to where we were last fall. It used to kind of, you know, be a kind of a backward C, going from, you know, north central around to south central, right? And so it has changed a little bit. It coalesced around that northeast Iowa area. At the same point, you know, the severe drought, the D2, has really remained in that southwest central, south central area. And we've seen improvements actually up in northwest Iowa. So there is some good, you know, some good news, you know, in this outlook, so to speak, of the drought monitor. And that's really, you know, up in northwest Iowa, where they've actually had some dry conditions for several years in a row. And so they're enjoying this slight reprieve.
Yeah. Yeah. Last night, I don't know about you, you're part of the state. I think most of the state got some precipitation. My brain likes to wake me up at 2 or 3 in the morning. I heard some raindrops on the roof. So we did get some rain across the state, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah, there was rain. I know I was down in southeast Iowa yesterday afternoon. And when I left mid-afternoon, you know, it was sprinkling or starting to sprinkle, right? I think southern Iowa did really well in getting some nice precipitation. Southeast probably a little bit more so. But I think the whole state did get some precipitation, maybe not as much as, you know, as some places would like. Right now, any precipitation is welcome. And I think, you know, we all appreciate that.
Yeah, we had this very strange winter. Some call it a missing winter. I wonder what you're hearing otherwise from farmers, questions, concerns they may have from Iowa producers leading into this season. I mean, when it comes to weather, Mark, we have the, of course, climate change with the increased extreme weather events that we have. Do we really know what's coming our way as far as trends affecting agriculture?
Yeah, I think, you know, those the weather variability that you mentioned, right? I think that's going to happen, right? We're seeing more severe storms, heavier storms, especially in the spring of the year. And then we are tending to go a little bit on the dry side in July and August. And that's a time frame that we typically have higher temperatures in and precipitation starts to pull back, but we're seeing it pull back a little bit more. So, yeah, I think those things are really true. And then you get an odd winter like we've had, and it does have farmers thinking, right? So, you know, I think, you know, the most immediate thing that they're thinking about is obviously the planting season and what are those decisions that they should be making, need to be making, as they think about dry conditions in the spring, you know, because that is looking really likely, right? And so how do they change some of their management, you know, in the spring that maybe will help them be a little bit more resilient as we go through the summer? And so that's, you know, that's on the top of their minds. And so we're talking about things like, how do we manage crop residue? You know, and so, you know, ideally we want to leave as much of that crop residue on the soil surface. It can, so to speak, insulate, so keep that soil a little bit cooler, but it can reduce evaporation of moisture out of that topsoil. You know, and so things like that are really important for the farmers that have cover crops. You know, how do we manage those cover crops, right? They're actively growing, so they're actively using soil moisture. And so as we think about the spring being a little bit on the drier side, we may want to terminate those a little bit earlier than we normally would, right? So conserve a little bit of that soil moisture. Now that also comes at a cost, right? So we aren't maybe going to get the benefits out of those cover crops that we would if we let them get, you know, 2, 3, 4 feet tall, you know? So these are hard decisions, right? I mean, we want those cover crops, and we want the residue out there for, you know, the soil health, the environmental reasons. But from a crop production, we may have to try to balance those benefits a little bit more.
Yeah. Let me quote from an Iowa Capital Dispatch article by Jared Strong here and have you react to that, because on the note you just sounded there, well, let me just read. A buildup of nitrate in farm fields has likely resulted from Iowa's longest running drought in 70 years and has set the stage for a potentially massive uptick in stream pollution, state water quality observers say. He quotes here Chris Jones, the former University of Iowa researcher, saying these extreme events are quickly becoming the rule. And when we return to this wet regime, this is going to be epic when he talks about agriculture's effects on water quality. What's your view there?
Yeah, he's making some really good points. You know, we know that basically nitrates, which is a plant available form of nitrogen, we know that they flush through the soil system very easily, right? They're not tied to the soil. They're not tied to organic matter. You know, they're really mobile and move with water, right? And so dry years is a really good way to keep nitrate in the system for, you know, crops and other plants to take up, right? And so with the dry weather that we've had the last 3 to 4 years, you know, we really have not seen the nitrate losses into our, you know, streams, rivers, you know, lakes, right? Now, I think there is some concern that, yes, if we get, you know, some heavy rainfall, we start getting tile flow, draining water out of the soils, then yes, we're likely going to see nitrates, you know, rise in the streams and rivers. Now, it's not like it's a cumulative, you know, going back through this dry period, because we have had, you know, corn and soybeans and crops taking up nitrogen and utilizing it. So it's in some respects every summer, you know, with that crop growth, we reset that, you know. So once we harvest, that's when the nitrate buildup, you know, in the soil starts to build again. And that's just through a natural process that, you know, we're lucky to have, right? We have a lot of organic matter, and organic matter mineralization occurs naturally when we have soils that are not frozen and we have adequate moisture there. You know, so I really do think that Chris is making some good points, but I don't know that it may not be as severe as sometimes we think it might be.
Okay. Mark Licht, we always enjoy your expertise, your insights, associate professor and extension cropping systems specialist at Iowa State University. Take care, Mark. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yes, thank you.
And that just about does it for this News Buzz edition of River to River on this May the 8th, 2024. Let's groove into the weekend with CeCe Mitchell, IPR Studio One host. Hi, CeCe.
Hey there, Ben.
We are in the mood to be, oh, are we ever, grooved into the weekend. What do you have for us?
Sure thing. So the first track I have to share with you today, it's called All the Same. It's the latest single from The Voids. So The Voids is, it's a side project of Julian Casablancas. He's from the band The Strokes. And so in their music, you definitely get a taste of that sort of Strokes vibe, but it's still its own unique project with its own sort of experimental sound. So I think you'll like it. Here's the track All the Same by The Voids.
All the same, all the same.
Ooh, CeCe, I do like the vibe there from The Voids, All the Same. We have time for one more. What do you got?
Sure thing. The second track I have to share with you today, it's by the band Krungbin. They're a three-piece band from Houston, Texas, and they played the Hinterland Music Festival before. They were great at the Hinterland Festival. They have this really sort of like almost hypnotic sort of sound that I think a lot of people would enjoy. So here's the latest single from Krungbin. It's called May 9th.
May 9th, the title of that tune by the band Krungbin. We'll go out with that, CeCe. Thanks for grooving us into the weekend, and remind our listeners who may not tune into IPR Studio One, whether it's what indie rock, singer-songwriters, blues, local, regional music, you have it all, right?
Yep, we sure do have it all. We're on six nights a week for Studio One Tracks. That's 7 to 10 p.m. And then we have Studio One All Access, 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. And it repeats on Sunday nights.
Okay, thanks so much, CeCe Mitchell.
Thanks, Ben.
Today's River to River, produced by Samantha McIntosh. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a wonderful weekend.